Welcome to Not Just a Shooter 1.7, brought to you by Gordon Fall of New York Life Insurance. This is our NBA draft episode. We are here to discuss winners and losers, who should have gone first overall, second overall, third overall. We might have some different thoughts than the teams that actually picked in those positions. I may think personally that the team that chose number five ended up with the best player. You may think differently. We also run down Big Ten players you're familiar with, including one Mo Wagner, who now has the wonderful opportunity to play alongside one LeBron James. So it is July 12th. The World Cup is happening. And do we miss any basketball stuff, Alex?
You know, I don't think so. I remember there being a game on my birthday, which was June 8th. I think two teams, Golden State and Cleveland, might have played. It might have been a decisive game. But other than that, I don't really remember.
I vaguely remember LeBron getting kind of aggravated at J.R. Smith about something. But that's pretty much it from...
It's just such a far distant past that it's really hard to recall.
Yeah. So welcome to Not Just a Shooter. We took a bit of a vacation, and the NBA Finals happened during that vacation, as well as the draft, and most of free agency, as well as Kawhi Leonard asking his way out of San Antonio. We are going to attempt to cover most of that. The Finals is not really worth covering because Golden State swept. And, yeah, that's. I mean, Cleveland had a chance, and then J.R. Smith grabbed the rebound and didn't know the score, and that was about that.
Yeah, and Cleveland was a couple of possessions away in 2016 from becoming the Buffalo Bills basketball version.
Yep, they were very close.
They were very close. And I think the thing to note, too, is so before Durant joined the Warriors, the Cavs were 6-7 against the Warriors in two finals. And then once Durant joined, they were 1-8. So
it's really been a turning point.
Pretty much the same team in Cleveland the whole time, minus Kyrie this year. And I guess minus Kyrie and Kevin Love in their first year. But anyways, that's all over now.
It's over.
Yeah. No more.
And yeah, it was not a finals worth discussing much, except in the greater context of what's good for the NBA. But we're going to, instead of doing that, move on right ahead to the NBA draft, which went generally as expected. You know, DeAndre Ayton, I was not a surprising choice at number one, considering... he came up in Arizona, both at the high school and college level, and Phoenix owned the number one pick and needed a center. That made a lot of sense.
Owner is big into Arizona basketball as well, U of A, so there was an additional connection there. People had speculated that their new coach, who was Luka Doncic's coach for this national team, might have swayed that decision, but I think the owner being a U of A guy and Ayton, He was a pretty obvious choice the whole way for them.
Yeah, and I think the big story kind of coming out of this draft, especially considering the direction that the NBA is headed in general, is that five of the top seven picks are big men.
Yeah, and you know, I think you could really make a case for most of them as having, you know, the best career outlook. I think Wendell Carter at number seven, I'm pretty high on him. I think he didn't really get a chance to show what he had on the offensive end at Duke. And he's a solid all-around player, but not as much star potential. But the other four, very intriguing prospects, high ceilings for some of them, really high ceilings for, I mean, Jaren Jackson. We could have seen him play fully optimized in college, but we'll hopefully get a chance in the NBA because he could be really good.
Yeah, I suspect we're going to look back and say that he was actually drafted too low at number four.
I agree.
I had him personally as one of the top two guys heading into the draft. I would have taken Doncic and then Jaren Jackson, actually, over DeAndre Ayton because I his lack of a defensive impact at Arizona scares me. And the when you go and dive into the numbers and look at defensive comparables for players of his size who played a year in college and didn't have an impact on the defensive end, I have similar concerns about Marvin Bagley for the same reason, and probably even more so with Bagley because Duke straight up went to his zone to hide that guy. But we kind of expect the Kings to screw up. So, I mean, them taking him at number two when you've got Doncic and Jackson and Bamba on the board does not shock me a whole bunch.
Not a shocker. Yeah, but, and with Ayton, I could definitely see him, you know, kind of topping out as a 20 and 10 calories guy on a not very good team, which, you know, do you want that at number one in this draft? It's hard to say. Doncic, so much hype. I really cannot believe that he fell to the Mavericks. It really shows that some franchises are well run and some just aren't, and teams that are in the lottery are in the lottery for a reason, because I can't believe it.
I thought that was a gift from the Hawks to the Mavericks, that not only did the I'll come out and say right now that I think the Hawks are the big loser from this entire draft, because they somehow had the who I thought were the two best players in the entire draft fall to them at number three, and drafted one of them and traded him away for the guy who's probably got the biggest bust potential of anybody in the top seven in Trae Young. I'm actually quite confident in saying that, I think. Young could be, a Steph Curry type player, but he
could be a gymmer.
Yeah, he could be a gymmer. He did not have the same body of work. His shooting stroke isn't as consistent, and he is also quite turnover prone, and he's real dang small. We're seeing him getting pushed around a little bit here in Summer League, and you've got to be concerned if that's happening in Summer League. So we'll see. He's a guy who obviously has a ton of offensive potential, but I just don't know with him on defense. Certainly if I had the choice between having him run my offense or Doncic, who can do a lot of the same things that Trae Young does, but at 6'8", and has a really impressive skill set as well. And as also, he's the best young player in international basketball history. That Doncic and Jackson we're going to look back on and say we're underdrafted. I'm pretty confident about that, which is impressive considering they were picked third and fourth. Doncic getting traded away, I think Atlanta's going to regret that quite a bit.
Yeah, there's rumors that Atlanta's ownership kind of leaned on the front office for that decision, and they're really processing hard right now. The extra pick is, I guess, a consideration. But when you're drafting, when you have the number three pick, is a mid-first rounder really enough to get you to pass on Doncic for Young? I do think that there probably is something to that. They have a smart front office. I don't know why they would make that pick unless somebody from higher up kind of dictated it to them. And Trae Young's offense in college was a joke. It was fun to watch.
Until the last month.
Yeah, he hit a wall in the competition. He was playing in the toughest conference. But
he was.
The stats are just absurd and, pretty good efficiency on just unfathomable usage, like LeBron with a bunch of scrubs level usage. And that's really what it was. And I think a lot for him projects to how well he runs a ball screen, which, to your point, Luka Doncic is an excellent ball screen player and he's not tiny. I don't think the off the dribble 35 footers are going to fly for Trae Young right away. That kind of a green light to, unless you are trying to tank. They probably, yeah. Another first round or high first rounder, I'm sure. But yeah, that those two will kind of be tied together by the hip. And yeah, the Mavericks have a, interesting mix. Harrison Barnes, DeAndre Jordan, Doncic, Dennis Smith Jr. And you can see him being the type of player that Dirk was for them. Just star, face of the franchise. The fact that they're European seems kind of coincidental to me, but
Doncic does seem to have a similarly fun personality. Dirk was and is a unique character and probably underappreciated for being so.
Oh, absolutely.
He and Steve Nash could have done the whole buddy cop thing and been a smash hit if they'd been somewhere besides Dallas.
It's a partnership too beautiful to last for very long in this world.
It really was. I think Doncic is going to be a star. Ayton, I'm expecting big things out of. I just think when you're drafting a center these days, you really got to be sure that they're going to hold up on the defensive end, because otherwise they're basically unplayable. I'm with you. I like
at the highest level.
Yeah.
The regular season guys, you can kind of get away with some of that, but once it really push comes to shove, at least the way the game is played right now.
And when you're drafting in the top 10, you hope you're picking a guy who's going to be able to see the floor in a playoff series.
Phoenix should just try to get to 35 wins. I mean,
yes, but when you're drafting first overall, you want a franchise player who you can win a title with. And with Ayton, I mean, he's got some questions to answer there. I mean, I'm with you. I like Wendell Carter a fair amount, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if Ayton ends up being on the lower end of the top five guy of the five big men who got drafted in the top seven, because I mean, Mo Bamba, we've seen some off-season videos of him where he has really improved, not just his shooting, the rate at which the ball is going in, but his shooting form looks completely different in a good way. He had a very long sort of shot put thing going on at Texas. But there's no question if that guy had some weight, like, he's going to be an awesome rim protector.
Yeah. And, you know, he kind of wasn't as impactful as you would have maybe liked to see at Texas, but you put him in the right situation, and yeah, that guy is going to be terrific, you know, high character, smart guy, according to all reports. And the Magic, not a great place for a player to develop. Like, I feel like so much
of this is
on being in a good situation. Like, Jaren Jackson, the Grizzlies, good landing spot. Doncic with the Mavs, great landing spot. Bagley with the Kings. If you go somewhere else, you probably are going to have a better career. That's just the way it is. So how would you rank the top five big men? I'm guessing you would go Jackson, Bamba, Carter, Ayton, Bagley.
I think I'd still keep Ayton above Carter, but otherwise, yeah, that'd be my list. Bagley seems, I mean, I should qualify this by saying I think these guys could all be all-star level players. But you would certainly hope that you're getting somebody that you think could be an all-star in the top seven. And then you're starting to look at who's a sure thing, who brings the highest floor, and also who has the highest ceiling. And with the top two guys, especially with Bagley, since he's not quite the physical marvel that Ayton is, you got to bring more than rebounding and hustle, I think, at that spot. If you're going to be 6'10", 6'11", power forward / center, Bagley worries me. And like you said, it's not good when you have to try to develop in Sacramento. It's just not.
You're playing from behind. And yeah, you know, I think all of them could possibly be all-star level players in time. I'm a little higher on Ayton than you are, I think. If he's coached well, I think he's so young. He came to basketball kind of late. The defensive indifference or inability, it is alarming. I mean, no doubt about it. But I think that if he becomes functional on that end, then the offensive upside, I mean, he could be an Embiid type scorer. Won't be a defensive player of the year candidate like Embiid, but you know, you're getting a good player there. Phoenix, I don't know. Their young core, I don't know if it's going to work out in the West. If they're in the East, who knows? But yeah.
If they're in the East, they'd be a playoff team probably, but
they aren't. Well, they won't be.
They're very much not. They are better run than I would say the two teams that it. Well, I take that back. Phoenix has not been particularly well run recently, but they've put together a team in a way that seems a lot more sensible than the way Sacramento and Atlanta are going about it. And those are the two teams that picked right after them. And we also mentioned Orlando being a bit of a tire fire.
Yes, I don't know what they're doing. Like John Isaac, Aaron Gordon, and Mo Bamba. Like, you're just going to run that out there? Are you just hoping to hold teams to like 0.8 points per possession and win rock fights? I mean,
there doesn't seem to be much of a coherent plan there, but that could be said for, I think, most of the teams in the East, including, one thing I want to get to in this draft, that there, it feels like there is a pretty significant drop off after the top seven. That might be my personal skepticism about Colin Sexton being an effective NBA point guard, considering the dude kind of had to put the team on his back role at Alabama and was wildly inefficient for the most part.
I don't know if he will be that kind of guy, but I love his game anyways, just from an aesthetic standpoint.
He's fun to watch.
He was talking trash to Penny Hardaway.
That video, don't get me wrong. If you haven't watched it, look up Colin Sexton, Penny Hardaway. It's Colin Sexton destroying Penny Hardaway and his entire family.
Your son sucks. I think that was along the lines of what he was talking trash to.
Yes, I believe he just turned to Penny Hardaway and said he's trash. while at the free throw line. Sexton does not lack confidence.
He would be a great tank commander if they trade Love. I think that would be like, okay, Colin, you can take 18 shots a game. I know you want to. Go ahead.
The dude literally played in a 3-on-5 game and almost pulled it out for Alabama against Minnesota. So, yeah, I could see him running a tanking team pretty well.
They had a positive point differential against Minnesota after it went 3-5. Like, how is that possible?
Richard Pitino. That's how that's possible.
I guess. Kevin Knox has been getting a lot of summer league hype, you know.
He lit it up in the second half in a game yesterday where the Knicks almost mounted a furious summer league comeback. I've been bored lately.
From it, I guess.
I mean, he could be a nice piece on the Knicks. I'm never going to believe in the Knicks while James Dolan is running the franchise. So
no,
which is really too bad.
I will believe in the train Tim partnership along with some European guy that they also have, I think. But yeah, Trey and Tim, he'll get them to the playoffs.
Yeah, and then, I mean, we can start. We should probably mention the next pick specifically because Mikal Bridges got drafted by Philadelphia, where his mom works for the team. she's interviewed with him after the selection, and then while he is giving more interviews, he's traded to Phoenix.
So the team has the best record in the league.
Yeah, so that's got to be a tough one because he looked like he was going to slot right in as a rotation player on a contender at home. I mean, kid grew up in Philly, went to Villanova, and said, I mean, Phoenix is putting together an interesting team, and you know there might be something to be said for not having the daily pressure of having to go to work where your mom works. That might be kind of awkward, but that was a kind of brutal draft night moment. And then I think the other real notable thing from the middle of this draft is Michael Porter Jr. slipping all the way to 14th because of the concerns about his back injury that kept him out all but a handful of minutes his freshman year at Mizzou. I mean, this was the guy who was competing for the number one spot in his class, was considered a potential number one overall pick before the injury. And then we see him. I mean, first of all, he walks into the draft and walks down the stairs, and he looks like an old man while he's walking down the stairs, which is not great. You don't want to see a 19, 20-year-old kid walking like that when you're about to invest millions of dollars in his athletic ability. On the flip side for this, I mean, I love the pick for Denver at 14 because you're potentially getting a top three talent with the 14th pick, and the guys around him are, if you knew who Jerome Robinson and Troy Brown Jr. were heading into this draft, you were more of a draftnik than most people. And that's who went right around Michael Porter, who pretty much everybody has known for the last couple of years. So, I mean, a major boomer bust pick for Denver, but could be a real interesting player to go along with Nikola Jokic if things come together and he doesn't get hurt again. That said, back injuries are really scary, so that could also backfire in a major way.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's going to work. Like, in theory, yes, it's, you know, great pick for the Nuggets, and yeah, to me, why not make that pick, I guess, the team that they have right now, I guess you can afford to take a flyer at the end of the lottery.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can say, oh, yeah, you know, potential all-star talent, you know, smooth, very long scorer. Michael Porter Jr. compared himself to Kevin Durant, which is aspirational.
Indeed.
But that back injury, man, that just would scare me away. Evidently, it scared away almost half of the NBA, and teams absolutely could have traded up to grab him.
To grab other players. So
canceling workouts. And to me, if he does play and becomes a functional NBA player for a good amount of years, I will be really happy for him, because to have all that talent and to have that injury is just so, so brutal. But I wouldn't expect that to happen, where he's, you know, good rotational player for 10, I can't see it.
Yeah, and it's also a risk for the Nuggets in that He was part of a massive run on Wings that went all the way from pick 12 to pick 22. So, I mean, he's definitely got the most upside of those guys, but if he washes out, there's a good chance that, you know, maybe they wanted Zaire Smith or Kevin Herter or, you know, Troy Brown or Jerome Robinson or white Dante DiVincenzo.
The ginger Italian.
If you're not watching High Noon on ESPN with Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre, their riffing on white Dante is tremendous, and I highly recommend that show. You're an MGO blog reader, so you've probably already met Gordon Fall. Yes, the guy who comes to all of our events. Yes, he is named after Gordie Howe. Yes, Wayne Gretzky knows this and says hi, Gordie, whenever they cross paths. Seriously, Gordon has stepped up to sponsor this podcast, so we should tell you what he does. Gordon is a licensed agent with New York Life Insurance. He specializes in holistic policies for individuals with long-term goals and short-term financial situations. He would like to expand that roster now in anticipation of opening his own shop next year, and would rather work with fellow lifelong Michigan obsessives. If you're starting out in your career, growing your family, or beginning to think about retirement, you should talk to Gordon about crafting a plan for you. Visit GordonFall.com to start the conversation. That's GordonFall.com. We should also go over, we've now mentioned a couple of the Big Ten players who went in the draft. Michigan State guys were the first two off the board. Jaren Jackson at number four, as we mentioned, to Memphis. And then Miles Bridges was picked with the selection that originally belonged to Detroit, which we're just going to move right on past. He was selected by the Clippers and then immediately flipped to Charlotte. I mean, Bridges is on a very much rebuilding team, but that might be a kind of a nice spot for him to grow under very little pressure, because there's not a lot of people paying attention to the Charlotte Hornets. There are a lot of people that aren't even really aware that they're the Hornets again instead of the Bobcats.
Yeah, the thing to me, my only take on those two picks is that Michigan State and Tom Izzo had more lottery picks than NCAA tournament wins this season after winning 30 games.
I like that take.
My other take is, how do you not run a bajillion pick and pops for Jaren Jackson?
That was wild seeing that stat.
I don't understand. Like, does Izzo just not know that that's a play?
For people that didn't see the tweet that went out, I don't have the exact number on me, but I believe like Jaren Jackson like absolutely lit up his first game in summer league. He hit multiple pick and pop 3-pointers. He was making it rain from NBA range easily. I think it was something like 4 for 6 from downtown, and it was relatively early.
I think he finished 8 for 13 in that game.
Yes,
first game of summer
league. And somebody went on to Synergy and looked it up and found that Michigan State ran, I believe, fewer than 30 pick and pop possessions for Jaren Jackson as an entire freshman season.
Yeah, less than one a game.
It's just I don't know how you do that.
They got
on
the ball
accident
on the low block, though. They got the ball to Miles on the low block. That's and hey, I mean,
and they got
many,
the ball to Ben Carter in the middle of that zone.
Yeah, long twos for Josh Langford too.
My goodness,
I think probably at least 100 to 120 long twos for Josh Langford last year.
Oh, his shot chart is hilarious, but it is almost completely devoid of 3-pointers above the break.
It's far. It's a long way.
Yeah, it's a. And, well, the thing is, in college, is there isn't even a break. I just use that term to carry it over from the NBA. Yeah. But, Josh Langford really loves to step in and then brick. But anyway, the next The next Big Ten player to go was Kevin Herter.
That was a great riff.
He went 19th to the Atlanta Hawks. So he's going to be on a team that's tanking. But he's another player who rose up kind of late in the draft process. And is an intriguing fit in today's NBA. I mean, he's a beeline guy. He's a long shooter. Has some athleticism. Good basketball IQ. And he's a guy who you hope can play the two or the three, and maybe some small ball four if you're going pretty small. Probably not the most ideal situation.
I think he could run ball screens for teams in the NBA, and I'm pretty high on him. I think 19 is a pretty good spot for him to land. And he's going to be playing on bad teams, but he's going to get a lot of reps. 6'7" shooter, good passer. I mean, I am pretty surprised based on Maryland's season that he rose that high. I don't know if Colin took too many shots away from him. I don't know if NBA teams just saw him and fell in love with him at the combine, but either way, most mock drafts had him in the second round, and most people thought he was going to come back to Maryland. It was a big hit. They did get Bruno Fernando back. They did not get Justin Jackson back. But, it should be interesting to see how he turns out.
Yeah. And then the next Big Ten guy to go is one of ours, Mo Wagner, to the Lakers with the 25th pick. So unless some sort of trade action goes down with Kawhi that involves Mo Wagner, he's going to get to play with LeBron James. We'll see how much of a role he has this year. The Lakers are still piecing together that team a little bit.
I don't know, dude. I think, their only centers on the roster at the time of this recording are JaVale McGee, Vitzia Zubac, and Mo Wagner. And you want spacing around LeBron? There's not going to be a lot of spacing on the roster. LeBron loves to pick and pop. I think we'll probably play a decent amount in the regular season. And, it's hard to say. I mean, who knows? It's fun. It's fun to think about the possibilities. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, and Wagner has he's looked pretty good in summer league. He has even been protecting the rim a little bit, and that's probably going to be kind of what determines whether he's able to carve out a significant role this year, or if he's a guy that they're playing kind of out of necessity.
But I don't know how it's going to work out with JaVale down there, but very exciting for Mo. Great landing spot, and I think LeBron will elevate his game. I think Mo can probably play pretty well off of him. And the fact that he is so versatile in the ball screen game, I mean, you look at the teams LeBron's played with in the last several years and spread ball screen, and, you want JaVale to put that, pressure on the rim for the pick and roll, but Mo has so much more scoring diversity to his game. So.
Yeah, the fact that he can put the ball on the floor, we'll get to it in the free agency portion, but the Lakers are making a very concerted effort to put guys around LeBron who can create their own shot. Wagner does fit that, and if they are able to spread the floor around Bron, which is to be determined, I think, beyond Wagner, that could really open things up for him in a way that is perfect for his offensive skill set. Because you do get even that, with the longer three-point arc, you get even that few feet more space to operate inside, and when defenses are actually stretched, a big man who can take another big off the dribble like Mo can be a really valuable asset in the ball screen game. So it'll be fun to see how his interplay with LeBron develops. Again, if Los Angeles can field a team around him where the defense doesn't just collapse in, which we'll have to see. Other Big Ten players, I don't. There wasn't much. The aforementioned Justin Jackson, who was projected as a potential lottery pick last year, dropped down to the mid-second round, 43rd pick, ends up getting traded to Orlando. So we probably won't hear from him for a while. Keita Bates-Diop goes 48th to Ohio State, or from Ohio State goes 48th to the Minnesota Timberwolves. That's an interesting one because he was somebody I thought could sneak into the back end of the first round.
Yeah. Well, what's funny about Keita Bates-Diop, and just sort of going back to Justin Jackson real quick, I feel pretty bad for him. He definitely should have left. He was first rounder, got hurt, clearly was sent when he was playing, then shut it down a third of the way through the season. So that's a real bummer. Hopefully it works out for him in the NBA. KBD for Ohio State. Yeah, some people were thinking late first for him. I think, you know, that he's the archetypal tweener, you know, that people had always been down on, but now kind of looks like a positive, like, you know, is he a three or four? Like, what is his, like, NBA skill? What sticks out to me, KBD, player of the year in a power, you know, conference, drafted at 48. Drafted at 24 was a player directly out of high school, Anthony Simmons, who went to Portland. So the NBA, I think Katabiats Diop shows more than anyone almost that college product in Jalen Brunson, who fell to the second round after being like national player of the year.
Yes.
Youth and potential, doesn't matter what you do in college. KBD had a great season at Ohio State, hopefully carves out a role with the Timberwolves. Still kind of salty he didn't wind up at Michigan, but who knows, hopefully it works out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a potential league, and in fitting with that, the last two Big Ten players to go actually went back to back. Tony Carr, the Penn State point guard, ends up with the Pelicans, in a trade that actually went to the Pelicans via New Orleans, Miami, New Orleans, and Chicago, and then back to New Orleans. That's quite a draft pick.
He was always a guy that was going to go, and his combine, like Mo's last summer, did not go well and cost himself a lot of money, I think, going now as opposed to coming back. I mean, you never know, but you would think that he would have gone higher than 51. I liked his game, but maybe they just don't think that he is quick laterally enough or something.
That and his inefficiency inside the arc was, I think, a sticking point for NBA scouts who are a little bit worried that, you know, if his three-point shot shooting didn't translate, then that would really limit his game.
Yeah, not really a stopper. So I guess I can see it.
But the next guy, Vince Edwards, out of Purdue going to Houston, he could actually be a guy who could maybe make an impact for Houston this year. I mean, because first of all, they're going to need it on the wing, because right now their options are go after Sparks. Carmelo.
I don't want to talk about that yet.
And that's not ideal. You know, Vince Edwards, he was never a guy who popped off as a superstar, but he was always a guy who did pretty much everything quite well. And he's got good size. He's got a decent outside shot. I mean, you know, everybody on Purdue was shooting 40% from beyond the arc except their centers last year. He was one of those guys. Solid defender, solid rebounder. I mean, his drop surprised me. Not that I thought that he was going to be a guy who even necessarily snuck into the first round, just because he's not an athletic marvel. He's not a young guy. But you look at the production, you look at the skill set. I mean, there are going to be some guys that wash out in front of him, and I think he's going to be a guy who ends up being a reliable rotation player, and that. You can pull that with the 52nd pick, you've done pretty well for yourself.
Yeah, the Rockets are a well-run team, which, and yeah, a great situation to develop. Like, if Vince Edwards goes to the Bulls, we're not very optimistic about his career, but since he landed with the Rockets, it's great. And I think the question for him, like you said, you know, he can shoot. His assist rate was pretty good. I know a lot of that was post-entries, but decent playmaker with the ball in his hands, you know, passable. Not that he's going to have the ball in his hands much at all in Houston. But the question to me is, can he switch defensively? You know, they need that on the wing. If he's a guy that's too slow to keep up with guards and not physical enough to bang down low, I don't know. He might kind of wash out a little bit of the rotation, but they're already in the, you know, they're paying a lot of money. A second round pick to have on the roster, just another arrow in their quiver. I'm sure he'll stick with the team this year, but yeah, we'll see how it works out. We might see him come playoff time. Maybe we'll see him get to play against Mo in the conference semifinals or something.
Yeah. All right. So before we move on from the draft, a quick lightning round. I want to hear your biggest winner and your biggest loser team wise from this draft, and also player wise.
Biggest winner, the Mavs, Luka Doncic, and I hadn't considered this question, so I might have to think it over.
The Mavs were going to be my answer as well, because not only did they get Doncic with basically the fifth pick and a protected first rounder, but they also picked up Jalen Brunson in the second round, who, I mean, once you get that far, that's a solid pick to get somebody with that level of production. And then moving on later in the draft, they picked Shake Milton and then traded him to get Ray Spalding and then the Greek Freak's little brother, Kostas Antetokounmpo, which, you know, maybe a reach with the last pick of the draft, but just to get those genes on your roster. And plus, I mean, Giannis is going to be a free agent at some point, and Milwaukee is not a place that tends to hold on to their free agents. So we might look back and go like, you know what, Kostas was the best last pick in the draft, including Isaiah Thomas, because just for the possibility that you stick him in the D League for a couple years and then go, hey, Giannis, do you want to play with your brother? If that works, that's about the best use of the 60th pick I could imagine.
Yeah, and he was not super impactful at Dayton, to say the least. I think he averaged like 4 or 5 points a game, but hey, why not? 60th pick, might as well. My biggest winner as a player, Zaire Smith, mid-lottery, kind of mid to late first-round type guy. Some people are really high on him. Some people are a little more skeptical. He was a three-star that athletic freak, one and done, was not on anybody's recruiting radar out of Texas Tech. Lands with the Sixers and great opportunity to develop. They have spacing, weirdly enough. A well-coached team can play off with some superstars as he develops. And, yeah, above their own player, should be pretty fun to see if he, you know, pans out. He'll be a really fun player. So Zaire Smith's my answer with that one.
All right. And any player who you think, like, got stuck in a particularly bad situation? Is the answer just Marvin Bagley here? Or are we just going to go with whoever got picked by the Kings?
I think Mo Bamba. You know, there was talk that the Celtics might trade up for Mo Bamba. There's talks that he might go to Dallas. You know, I think he would have had Doncic gone off the board before the functional number 5 pick and winds up in Orlando. And, yeah, you know, I mean, shoot. Maybe he can sell some Amway stuff down there. I don't know.
Another guy we should probably mention who's along these lines is Robert Williams, who the Texas A&M player, who Michigan fans got to see a taste of in the NCAA tournament. But both college basketball and that Texas A&M team that was very post-up oriented in general was just a terrible showcase for Williams, who's a rim-running pick-and-roll guy for the most part, and also the two-time SEC Defensive Player of the Year. He slipped largely due to concerns for his work ethic, which kind of came to fruition when he missed his flight for his first practice and then showed up like way overweight. But he's a lottery pick talent, and he's a guy who really fits the modern game. I mean, he's 6'10". When he's in shape, he's around 240, 250, and tremendously athletic. He's got great shot-blocking instincts. He's a strong finisher around the basket, and he's only 20 years old. And Boston, I mean, especially considering what else they were going to get around that the 27th pick, not a lot of guys around there who you think could potentially contribute off the bench to a contending team. Williams, if they're able to whip him into shape, is somebody who could be that guy. I mean, he could be the biggest steal in the draft potentially. Down that low. I also like, for defensive purposes, Javon Carter going to Memphis.
I'm going to bring up that pick before we were done. Yeah, that is just the most perfect pick that Memphis could have made. Javon Carter and Jaren Jackson. So it's a team that knows their identity and they're playing into it.
Yeah, I can hear first team all defense being yelled from the floor, even though I don't actually see Tony Allen right now, but it was a very Memphis draft to go that strong on the defensive side of the ball. Because Carter, we don't know whether he's an NBA player on the offensive end, but he might be the best defensive guard in this draft, flat out.
I think there's a good chance. The way he played at West Virginia, you know, picking up guys full court, and with the load that he carried for those West Virginia teams on offense. Very disruptive, long, quick. Should be fun to watch, see if he works out in Memphis.
It is a little wild to see him go the pick before Jalen Brunson, who was obviously a much more ballyhooed college basketball player, but Carter is a guy who could really develop into an extremely valuable backup point guard, and maybe even a starter if you have the right pieces around him.
Yeah, kind of crazy that, you know, a guy from France, kind of a late riser, Ely Okobo went, and then Javon Carter, and then Jalen Brunson, Devontae Graham, who are both, like, first-team All-American type players.
It's kind of the NBA is just a whole different ball game.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
There's no greater reminder of that than following along college basketball Twitter during the NBA draft, because they're all very confused by what's going on for the most part.
Yeah.
And they have strong opinions about some of these guys, although I agree with some of those strong opinions, but sometimes the NBA dudes have a little bit better of an idea of what actually projects to the league. So it's interesting to see how that goes, because you get the... I mean, like you said, there's, you know, a kid from ING and Anthony Simons gets drafted 24th, mostly based on youth and potential there. And then you've got guys like Brunson and Vince Edwards going
KBD.
In the second round.
Yeah.
Very, very productive college guys. But, I mean, one controlling players through their developmental years is really nice.
Yeah, one thing I would like to say about the NBA guys versus the college guys in terms of evaluating draft potential is the NBA guys who are really committed to it are great. Like, I mean, you look at the Draft Express guys who were hired by ESPN. There's some guys on Twitter who obviously take it just way too seriously. but then you have NBA guys that swoop in, you know, once the finals are over, watch some highlights, synthesize other opinions, and then project their strong takes. I mean, I know for a fact that, yeah, some writers – kind of, they solicit opinions, they don't really know what they're talking about. So yeah, buyer beware for the NBA draft evals, but the ones that are good, yeah, do provide fresh eyes that, you know, college fans can't really see as well. You know, Jalen Brunson.
Usually if you've had a chance to watch a player closely for a while, you can sometimes get a read on whether somebody's really actually a solid scout or is kind of BSing a little bit. Like, I was poking around at some Mo Wagner draft evals, and one of them described him as a strong screener, and I laughed out loud. I mean,
there was a reason why Michigan slipped so many screens with him.
Yeah, like, I don't really ever remember him contacting a defender on a screen. So that just, I mean, like, I can get, like, strong, like, that guy might have looked at a synergy page and saw that he was strong in the pick and roll game. And, you know, just made an assumption, but it was an incorrect assumption. And then you worry about what this guy's watching for the rest of it.
Well, hey, at least our extremely large son, John Teske, sets good screens.
Absolutely. There will be a very different field of Michigan's pick and rolls next year, including that it's going to be a lot more pick and roll than pick and pop.
Yeah.
Now that we have talking about Michigan, I think we're done with the draft episode. And since we have run almost 45 minutes, we're going to go ahead and call this an episode and say that we are going to hit you with a free agency focused episode coming up very soon. Thank you for listening to Not Just a Shooter, brought to you by Gordon Fall of New York Life Insurance. Shout out to undrafted free agent and two-way contract signee Duncan Robbins.
LeBron James, LeBron James, LeBron James, LeBron James, LeBron James.